On today's Question of Faith, what did we learn about priests from Catholic University? Hey everybody, this is Question of Faith. I am Mike Hayes. I am the Director of Young Adult Ministry here in the Diocese of Cleveland.
And I'm Father Damian Ferrance, the Vicar for Evangelization.
And I am Father Eric Garris, Vocation Director.
Hey, it's nice to have you back in the chair.
Yeah. It's great to be back here. Those of you who listened last week, I was also on. And Father Damian, you had an interesting role to play last week, right?
I did. Well, I just tried something a little different. I wanted to see what it would be like to speak as someone who was non-intrusive as a podcast host, kind of like an NPR host. I'm still waiting for some more feedback. I probably will never do it again, but I'm glad I tried it at least once. It was kind of fun to try not to break character.
Yes.
Because a few times I made myself laugh inside.
And outside.
And outside a little bit if you watch a video, I suppose.
That's you did true. Do a good job staying in character.
Thank you. Thank you. I looked down when I was looking at you guys. I started to break a little bit, so I just looked down like this.
When I was in college, I think I said this on the last podcast, I said that our college radio station became a public radio station while I was there. And so there's a little bit of an exodus of students, but the sports staff was always all students. So trying to get sportscasters to sound NPR-like was a real challenge for the new staff. And it just didn't really seem to fit. And finally I said to them, I said, guys, I hate to tell you, sports is kind of like a rowdy, raucous kind of thing. Like it's not, well, it's 1st and 10, and there's 10 yards to go.
There's a great – it's an old YouTube video. It's a guy who you can tell is, like, not into sports at all, and he's trying to commentate, and he gets all flustered. And he's like – and then boom goes the dynamite. It's this like just like them – it's like a basketball game. Someone makes a three. That's his response. He, like, doesn't know what to do or say. So
is that where that came from?
Boom goes the dynamite.
Oh, I didn't know the origin story. Yeah. That's cool.
That's funny.
Happy New Year, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Happy New Year. 2024. I've been waiting for this year.
Yeah? For what, a whole year?
Me too.
Just for a couple weeks.
Okay.
I knew it was coming.
Yeah. It can sneak up on you.
No. Yeah. I've been waiting. Hopefully this is my ordination year. We've still got 4 months to go or so. So, almost five, yeah.
The journey.
24 the plus journey. 24 is 48, and this year I'll turn 48.
Oh, very nice.
I'll turn 34, which is 24 plus 10.
Correct. Minus 5 plus 2 plus 3.
Yep.
There you go.
I will turn 54, which is 24 plus 30.
Wow. I like having a – so you're born in
– 70.
A 0 year.
Yes.
Yeah, 90. It's easy.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
76.
That's hard. You got to add
– I'm a bicentennial baby.
Oh.
Yeah. That's right. I remember the bicentennial barge came to town. That make its way here? It was
I don't know.
East Coast
I was
thing.
Just a newborn.
You were in the womb.
It looks like we have different generations around this table.
Kind of, yeah.
Right?
Like every 10 years or so.
No, because Mike and I are both Gen X.
Okay.
Because Gen X goes 64 to 81.
Yeah. But decade-wise, like we got a 50s, a 40s, a 30s.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know what? That's a nice segue into our question of the day.
Absolutely.
Because there's this wonderful... a new study that, what is it called, the Catholic Project at Catholic U did, and caught some headlines because of a little bit of polarization and generational dynamics between priests here. So let's chat about this. What do we think? So they did this one, it's figure one, self-rated priest, theological orthodoxy by ordination year, and way back in the day, so like before 1960, you had about 80% of priests identified as very progressive, somewhat progressive, or middle of the road. And that flipped by 2020, where you only have about, 15% identifying that way. And the rest are identifying now as conservative orthodox or very conservative orthodox. Right. Yeah. So what do we think about this?
Well, I mean, wasn't so surprising to me, I would say. I mean, if someone's going to join the seminary, I would think they would at least tilt in that direction most of the time. You know, it just seems kind of obvious to me. I was like, well, duh, you know. As opposed to someone who's kind of, beating the drum against church teaching or something or thinking the church should change their teaching on certain things, they would probably be less likely to say, I'm going to dedicate my life to an institution that thinks A, B, and C that I don't think.
And I think there's a dynamic of, it's to be countercultural. Like, I think as the society and culture has gotten, and I hate just to use generalizations, like crazier and more this, more that, but like, I think young people sense a call. I mean, to be holy is to be separate. And I think they view
that's a good point.
Set apart.
You know, like that to be not of just merely the things of this world, and to have a devotion towards that which they hold to be good, true, and beautiful. I mean, I've seen that at least in the discerners I work with.
Sure,
like they're committed to something not just of this world, but you know, and I think they view that having the secular influence on church or whatever it may be. So,
and if you look at the label Orthodox, like, what's the opposite of Orthodox? Unorthodox?
So that wasn't
teaching, part of it. So I don't know if I'd ever check off, like, I'm not Orthodox. I would always want to be with church teaching.
Yeah.
But if you think back, so it was before 1960, so before the council, and the church was at a major time of renewal during the time of the Second Vatican Council.
Right.
And I think a lot of the priests were very excited about this. I mean, Pope Benedict and Karl Voigt and Pope John Paul II were part of the Second Vatican Council and were very much for that. So I think back in the early 60s, they would have probably been seen as more progressive.
Sure.
But as time has gone on, I mean, heck, when, you know, Humanae Vitae came out in 1968, it was presumed that every major denomination would be pro sex within the confines of marriage. And that was kind of the understanding, even the document. It wasn't, the controversy was over artificial contraception, but the fact that the church taught that only married people have sex, well, of course that would be the case. That's not what many people think today.
Sure,
so
yeah.
When you say, well, sex is for marriage, or you think, I don't know, you treat immigrants with respect and love and dignity and kindness, you may say things that should not be surprising if you're a Catholic, but
right.
Some may say, I can't believe you just said that,
right.
Or that, what, you know.
And I wonder, is it liturgically orthodox? Is it liturgically progressive?
That's a good
question. Is it theologically orthodox? Is it theologically perspective? Is it ecclesiologically, you know, like, and that's where my difficulty with these terms is that, and we were saying this before, like we're imposing terms upon something that, like, that becomes your identity.
Right.
What about being Catholic? What about being all these things? What about loving the poor and loving and like caring about individuals in prison and caring about children prior to their birth?
Right.
Like
right.
These things aren't mutually exclusive, you know.
And I both and yeah.
Right. And is that orthodox? Yeah, that's what the church teaches.
Right.
Is it progressive to say I care more about this than that? I don't know.
Yeah. Father Damien, you said this to me one time. Like you said that, like when the council. So you just said this in a way a second ago, but I'm going to take it just a little differently. Like when the council came, there was sort of like a great spirit of reform, only because there were obvious reforms that happened. Like the altar turned around. You know, there were things that were visible to people that people embraced. You know, and that some people were a little thrown off by. And so many of the priests who embraced that, I think, were looking for more changes to come. And then when they didn't come, there might have been some disappointment on that end. And now I think a lot of those priests are saying that when they saw changes start to come, they knew that there was going to be like an obvious backlash to that as
sure.
well. And so maybe that's what we're seeing a little bit as well at this time. Is like, well, okay, we had this reform. Now let's reform the reform and see where we go from here.
Yeah,
know?
And back to the whole generational bit, like I think there is a different spirit within the Diocese of Cleveland because we do have our own seminary that,
yeah.
like,
that's
we're not
true.
Just forming men in a general way, but also the priests of the diocese, I hope they know that, like, they have a role to play in these men's formation and, like, I look at my own time in seminary. I was sent to various parishes with various priests who were retired 60s, 50s, 40s, like all over the place. So I think there is this sense of like learning from one another and not defining ourselves over and against one another.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, because you're older, you're this and I'm younger. I want to bring back Trent and you want to, like, no.
No,
I think there's a fraternity and a communal spirit that exists here that among priests, it's not, I don't care. Oh, I'm liberal. No.
I do think it's very important to have priest friends who may not think like you. So,
yeah.
For instance, or even if it's not about the thinking, or have had different experiences. So my first pastor was ordained in 1968, biggest ordination class the diocese has ever known. And he started his formation before the council and then saw it through. And so he did not like the cassock at all, because back in his day, they had to wear it. Even if they got to get up in the middle of the night to use the restroom, they had to put their cassock on. So he's like, nah, I liked it. And at the parish, I didn't wear it all the time, but I wore it from time to time. And I had to explain to him how I received that same symbol, which to him, at first, he's like, why would you? I'm like, we don't need to go back there. I'm like, where am I going back to, man?
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Yeah, yeah. I like the way that it looks. I think there's an identity. I think it speaks something of commitment. I don't know. Yeah. There's different experiences of church. And I'm in a priest support group. We meet every month. And in our group, we've got guys in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I think that's really healthy. It's kind of like our floor
here in
parish life. It's the same. We have from 20s into 70s. Yep. And we have people who have experienced the church in different ways. And so Bishop Molesik likes to say that there's enough room within the bounds for everyone to be. So maybe some people color on the right, some people color on the left, some people color in the center. Stay within the bounds and we'll be all right as church. There are certainly limits, but there's also different styles and different emphases.
Father Casey Cole says some similar things to what you just said. You know, he's a Franciscan, and he said he wears his habit regularly, out in the street, you know, to the grocery store, you know, things like that. And some of the older guys get on him about it, and he said, well, wait a minute, why do you dress the way you dress? Help me understand, which I always think is a good question. Yeah. Help me understand. And the guy said, well, I want to dress the way I dress in civvies because that's how the poor dresses, and that's who we're called to be with. And so Father Casey was like, okay, I understand that. And so he said, so once in a while, I dress that way.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And he said, you know, just to see what that's like. And he said, and then he said, well, I dress the way I dress because then people, younger people come up to me who would never come up to me in any other way because I'm a priest. They recognize me as a priest and they want to ask me, a priest is a visible symbol there that makes it attractive to them to come up and ask a question or to talk a little bit about faith where they wouldn't do that before. I saw that on campus. Like we had one of the craziest things I think I've done, not crazy, but I mean, strange maybe. I was one of the chaplains for the gross anatomy lab at a medical school. And so me and Father Pat Keeler in Buffalo went into the gross lab one day, and there was a young guy in there, and he ran over to Father Pat and said, Father, he goes, I'm so glad to see you. My grandmother just died, and I've been sitting in this lab around death all morning. And he goes, and I just need someone to pray with. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad to see you. Now, if I had walked in there as layman Mike, would he have come up to me as quickly? No, I would have had to introduce myself to him.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe he might have opened up. But there's something to that symbol still, I think. Yeah. You know.
Right. And I think the externals, like, obviously matters, and the way that we celebrate Mass and vestments and all, like, but if you're just going to define a person by that, like, that's not fair to the, like, I remember there's a priest in diocese who, you know, I really never knew, but would see all the time. And like, I knew that he was different than me, just as everyone else is, but like longer hair and like sandal, you're like, oh, this guy's a hippie from the 70s, you know, like, but do you sit down and have a conversation with that person, or do you let what you perceive to be what makes you different create a divide between you? I don't think so. That's why I think I've said it on this podcast before. My favorite day as a priest is Tuesday of Holy Week, when all the priests of the diocese get together and we have dinner together, and you sit there and like, there's so many things that make us different, but the one thing that unites us, and that's what we celebrate. Yeah. And you've got the lion with the lamb, the left with the right, the this with the that, and it doesn't matter because, I mean, what matters matters.
Yeah, and then you renew your vows together that night in front of the whole congregation.
Yeah.
I think, too, in terms of history, there was a time after the council where things were shaken up and needed to figure out, like, some settling. So in many ways, there was not a catechism until 1993 or 1994. Yeah. I don't know when Veritas the Splendor came out, around the same time. So there were some clarifications that took place that needed some time after the council, and I think the experience has been different for different generations. So baby boomer, Gen Xer, millennial and now Gen Z, there's all sorts of different things. So back in the day, if you know, you would not see a young woman come into the chapel with a veil. But that's pretty common today.
Sure.
I don't think anyone says you have to do that, but yeah, some people like to do it. Yeah. So that's what they do. Yeah. So I don't know. And I also think young people, because things are changing so rapidly and so quickly, want something that is not going to fade or leave or change. I mean, if something's alive, it's going to be growing. But I think they want to say, I want to be part of something that I know is going to last and endure. And so that's a little bit different than the experience of some folks in the early 60s who were like, okay, we need some definite renewal right now.
Yeah.
And the labels can be pretty difficult.
Right.
But think about how Pope Francis is sort of reflecting all of this in some way too, right? You know, so you have, you know, this the thing in Germany, the synodal way that's going on in Germany, that, you know, he's come in and said, oh, wait a minute, you're going a little too far here. This isn't mm-hmm. what you're supposed to do. And at the same time, you know, you have sort of a pullback of, you know, Pope Benedict's non-restriction of the Latin Mass to be celebrated, and said, well, no, some people are taking that too far, and so we got to come back to the center in some way.
Sure.
So I know that part of the impetus for the Holy Father releasing Traditiones Custodes was that he had heard that some who had rejected the Novus Ordo and only wanted to participate in the what was formerly known as the extraordinary form also had rejected parts of the Second Vatican Council.
Right.
I don't know how many that was, but that was definitely a concern of his.
Yeah.
So the extremes of you're going too far here or you're going too far there, and he's, as a shepherd, trying to hold the flock together.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, a priest friend of mine was a radio broadcaster on a Catholic radio station somewhere, and you know, and I'm interested in those things, obviously, right? And so I came up to him and said, hey, Father, how's Radioland going? He goes, oh, you didn't hear? And I said, hear what? And he goes, I was fired. And I was like, you were fired? Now, this guy was a very traditional kind of guy, and just in general, right? And I said, what'd they fire you for? He goes, they wanted me to say that the Second Vatican Council was not a council.
Mm.
And he's right, he, like, Father Eric's looking at me like, what, are you crazy? And he was like, and I was like, no, the Second Vatican Council was a council. And he goes, it's part of our church. It's infallible teaching in the church's sure. teachings. Yeah. And it just made me laugh. And I was like, okay, whatever. And he was like, yeah, he goes, they're going too far. I was like, well, then you're glad to be rid of them, I suppose. And he said, yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, so it's always good to kind of test both sides of these things and say, well, okay, where are we today?
Be a good Thomas. Stay in the middle, the golden bean, in all things but charity. Charity has no excess, but, yeah.
Moderation in all things, including moderation.
Yeah.
Except charity, of course.
All right. Anything else from our study, Catholic view, that we wanted to cover?
I think, like, these studies are good, and I know that, in particular, CARA, which is run out of Georgetown,
correct,
does similar studies but do them for seminarians and newly ordained.
Yes.
And, you know, you can get certain data points from them and different yeah. things that I think give at least a pulse or put a name to some things. But ultimately, like, it gives a snapshot of a snapshot. I don't think it's...
Yeah.
It's everything. And like, is there polarization? Yes. Why is there polarization? Because we're different. But like, back to what I said before, are we going to harbor these differences, or is it going to be, all right, we can come around the table and we can be revived by the Eucharist and be celebrating all these things together. One of my favorite funerals I ever had was for an individual who was in government, and there were some governmental individuals there, and I looked and I'm like, you're not on the right side. You're not on the left side. You're sitting together. It's that whole thing, like, people coming together. I mean, what matters brings us together, you know, let's celebrate it.
I always say weddings and funerals bring families together.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's everybody has to sit together now. You know, it's like Thanksgiving, I suppose, although it can be a little dicey. But weddings and funerals generally sure. do that for families, I think. That's good.
Good.
Church.
Stay with the church.
Yeah.
Speaking of the
not
church.
Not apart from...
Where are we going today for church?
We're going to
St. James in Lakewood.
Oh, right, yes.
Which is part of the new a little new configuration. So Father Kevin Albert was already the pastor of St. Luke on Bunce and Clifton, and now he is taking over St. Clement and St. James. And Father Garris and I have the honor of assisting at weekend mass help at all three of those places. And I'd like to talk about St. James because I was there recently, and in my homily, I pointed to at least two either parts of the church or frescoes. And after Mass, I actually mentioned St. Athanasius, and then someone did point. I said, I'm sure Athanasius is in there. Someone's found the stained glass window. So the church is based on a beautiful cathedral in Sicily, and it is ornate. It's colorful. I think it's one of the most beautiful churches in our diocese. And so I decided to challenge myself. Every time I celebrate Mass there, I will tie in some of the architecture or art into my homily somehow. And Father Garris likes the challenge, and he teaches preaching at the SEM. So I challenged him. So we'll see if he accepts or rejects that challenge.
Well, the first time I was there a couple of weeks ago, I preached about something very important within the community, within the church, which was people. Mm. So I had mentioned at the end of Mass that the building itself is under some pretty severe disrepair, and they've got some issues with roof and things falling down. But when I had Mass, it was such a nice, vibrant, young community. Like I always say, if there aren't crying babies in Mass, there's no life. Like that's a sign of a vibrant place. And but I told them at the end, I said, I don't just say this everywhere where it's like, yeah, it's really great to be here. Like I said, it was so nice to have such life here. And I had a woman come up to me afterwards, and she had tears in her eyes, and she said, you know, Father, I've been coming to Mass here, and I've just looked around, and I've seen how this place has fallen apart. And I focused so much on the externals that I've not focused at all on what's happening actually within the community. Mm. And she goes, I saw life. Like, so thank you for showing me that there is life here.
Yeah. One of my priest friends said recently, you know, sometimes the Lord wants to prune before he lets things grow back.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
Bringing that down to one Mass maybe was the pruning, and maybe the life is coming back.
Yeah, so. And we've talked about that. Like, I know parishes have changed Mass schedules that, like in the Eucharistic revival, less Eucharist. I'm like, no, would you rather have, you know, one Mass? Are you going to have three Masses with 20 people or one with 60? There's a sense of being a part of something. I'm not saying that there were 60 people at Mass, but, you know, there was a vibrancy that was there. So, and it's a beautiful, beautiful – Father Ferenc posted something to the effect of, like, you feel like you're in Italy. You don't feel like you're in America.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Walk in, you're like, where am I?
I've only been there for Mass once, and I went to a fish fry there once, but the vibrancy at both times that I was in there, I was like, wow, there's a lot of people in here. Yeah. I was like, this is really great.
Did you preach from the ambo?
No.
Okay.
I read from the ambo, and then I preached down front because that's what I normally do.
I like to preach from the ambo because that's where the words proclaimed and broken open.
Yeah, but if you read the German, it says you may preach from the ambo, chair, or another suitable space.
I know, but I felt like the ambo is like 8 feet up in the air, and you're like over the people. So that was kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, that's why I preached from where I preached.
Yeah.
It was another suitable place.
It's good. Good for you.
I've reflected from the center myself as well, Father, so I'm on your side here. But yeah, so St. James and Lakewood.
Go there, check
go
it out.
Go visit it.
Check it out.
10:30 Mass on Sundays. They have one Mass, but it's worthy.
Yeah.
Yes, lovely place. And then our readings for Epiphany. Wow, it's Epiphany already.
Yeah.
We're already in January.
Yeah.
And so Isaiah, rise up in splendor, Jerusalem, your light has come. The glory of the Lord shines upon you. See, darkness covers the earth, and thick clouds cover the peoples. But upon you, the Lord shines. Over you appears his glory. I just love that.
Yeah. I think of my classmate, Father Jacob Bear, who one year at Advent Lessons Carol sang the Rise Up in Splendor, Rise Up in Splendor, Rise Up in Splendor, Your Light Has Come.
Yep.
Reminds copyright. Me of Father Garris's favorite song from the Breviary. It's from Tuesday. Zion, sing, break into song. For within you is the Lord with his saving power.
We never sang that until.
Rise and shine forth. When I came back from CUA because the Capuchin sang it, and we never sang it. So I introduced it, and the
so
guys
Father
hated
Ferenc
me for
got
it.
Up, he's like, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
It's like, it's avant-garde. It's all over the place.
That's actually pretty traditional and orthodox of me to introduce a song that the guys didn't know. They're like, no, man, we want to sing like praise and worship. What? Anyway.
No. But I like Epiphany. Do you like Epiphany?
Like, why would I say I didn't?
I don't know. I mean, we're just, you know, What do you think about the Epiphany?
Not a fan.
Bim, 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 bim.
In my nativity scene that I have, it's been a tradition. My dad was a big Elvis fan.
Huh.
So there are four kings. There's Caspar, Melchior, Balthazar,
and Elvis.
And Elvis, Aaron Presley. So I have an Elvis in my king. Why, what's it? What's the bumper sticker? Wise men still seek Christ, or wise men still seek, you know?
A few years ago, I was at St. Stephen's Parish for an Oratina with the seminary, and I was looking at this stained glass window of the Magi. And it looked to me like there was two guys and a woman.
Mm.
And I've thought about this for a long time. And then I saw a similar stained glass window in another place. And I decided that I was wrong, not at what it looked like, but what it was. Because what it is, I think, is this. One of the kings is old. He has gray hair, big crown, gray beard. And the other guy has, like, brown hair and a brown beard. But then the other guy, who looked like a woman, didn't have any beard and kind of had female features and just a little hat. It didn't even look like a crown. But what I realize is it was supposed to be the three ages of man, meaning humanity in general. So you have old, middle age, and young. But they all are kings. So the person wasn't being avant-garde as the artist, although it did look like a woman. In the same way that sometimes John the Beloved, because he doesn't have a beard, looks feminine.
Sure.
If I can say that. Like more feminine features because he lacks beard. Anyway, so what I once thought to be the case is not the case, and that's what a phenomenologist would do. It's not that my senses tricked me. It's that I didn't think hard enough about it, and I realized the truth through phenomenological
manifestation of the object.
Well, I'm a dative of manifestation. It revealed itself to me. I just needed more time with it.
Right.
I jumped to a conclusion.
Yes.
Mea culpa.
Nah, you're good.
Thank you.
We still love you.
Seek Christ. He seeks you out.
There you go.
It's the top. Good.
And the Magi, they were all about science.
That's right.
And all about truth. And they didn't think that the Christ was somehow opposed to the truth. He is the truth. Faith and reason work together. Indeed. A good license plate.
On that note, exactly. Faith and reason would be a good license plate, indeed.
Be on the lookout for the Faith and Reason Mobile.
See.
A little less so now that you're...
Hopefully.
A little less of a commute. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Hopefully. Because you still could travel around the diocese a lot as vicar for evangelization.
See.
As do I.
As
you as vacation director.
I'm going to get a skateboard.
Yeah?
Yeah.
With jetpack? What about jetpack?
No.
Okay.
Not into it?
Nope.
All right. You have the right to not be into a jetpack.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So... Happy Epiphany.
Happy Epiphany.
And Happy New Year for this first podcast of the new year. So
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
For old acquaintance we forgot. I don't know the words. I just know that they make that noise.
Yeah, that's right.
That was supposed to be a party favor or a kazoo, and it didn't come out.
A little better.
Yeah. We should set off fireworks.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah.
Father Don wants, I think he wanted a fireworks display, he said. So.
That'd be fun.
Okay.
All right, so check out fireworks, check out Faith and Reason Mobile, and check out us next time here on Question 3.